Bezater. Okay. So like we said last week, we began our discussion on the first of the Aseret Devaros, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. We gave some background. We gave the background of how Avodah Zarah happened, especially in light of the fact that, as we all know, presumably when Noah got off the Teva, everybody believed in Hashem. Even if Ham was a Rasha, you know, presumably believed in Hashem. Otherwise, you know, it's hard for him. It's hard to understand how he survived the Mabul with the Teva, etc., etc. And yet, the situation devolved all the way down to Avram Avinu, where nobody believes in a Kodesh Baruch. What?
We can't really hear what you're saying, Rabbi.
You can't hear what I'm saying. I love Zoom. What about now? Now we're back. Okay, good. Lemaisa, I was just backing up and talking over our past discussion about how the world ended up devolving to the point where nobody believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu anymore. And the Rambam explaining how we got to such a point. And what we need to discuss now is, I guess, moving over from the background of Avodah Zarah into the question of, is Emunah one of the 613 mitzvahs? So I imagine this is something which is somewhat familiar to you guys, yes? This machlokas? If not, it's very important to know. It's a yesodistic machlokas. Actually, let's do it this way, just so I could see all of you while I'm doing this, and I'll stop sharing the screen in a moment. Just easier. One second. Okay, ready? Okay. So, the Rambam is Sefer Mitzvos, Mitzvah Asei Aleph. So, right, the beginning of the Rambam is kind of the Mitzvos. He says, V'ata eschil iskor mitzvos bezer shakai, v'mitzvah rishuna hi hatzivanu, hatzivu yeshir tzivanu lahamin ha'elukus. We need to believe in God. V'hu shenamin shiisham ala v'ziba. We have to know that there's a cause, u'polo kol nimtzos. He's the reason and the cause of all movement. V'hu amri yisvarach, anochi Hashem Elokecha, and that is the mitzvah of Emunas Hashem. And then the Rambam goes on to tell us how we get to 613 mitzvahs in the first place, right? The Gemara Maseches Makos, towards the end, talks about Taryag mitzvahs. And the brilliant part of the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvahs is obviously trying to codify it in a systematic way what gets counted as a mitzvah and what doesn't get counted as a mitzvah. So for the Rambam, it makes sense, one of the most important, or if not the most important mitzvah, is Emunah b'Hashem, believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, the Rambam counts it. Now, anybody know why the Rambam wrote the Sefer Mitzvos? What was his motivation to do so? Who was he not happy with?
The Bahag.
Excellent, fantastic. The Rambam was not super thrilled with the Bahag's count of his Sefer Mitzvos. So the Rambam thought that he counted mitzvos, there were certain mitzvahs that the Baha'i counted, part of the 613, that shouldn't have been counted, or the Baha'i left things out. Therefore, the Rambam embarks on this massive journey and project to give us a systematic way in which one can count the Targum mitzvahs. And those are what the Shoreshim are doing, right? In the beginning of Sefer mitzvahs, the Rambam tells us what gets counted and what doesn't. So, for example, you know, a mitzvah which is repeated many times in the Torah doesn't get counted. Another example, a mitzvah which is only l'shaita, which only temporarily doesn't get counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs. Mitzvahs d'rabbanan, according to the Rambam, don't get counted. Okay, there's a lot of shoreshim that one can look at in order to figure out exactly what gets counted and what doesn't. So the Rambam is actually coming to attack the Bahag. The Ramban, obviously, in his Asagos, is looking to defend the Bahag against attacks of the Rambam. If you want to know a little bit about the Ramban in general, the Ramban is the traditionalist and the conservative to the Rambam's, more progressive agenda. Now, obviously, I don't mean chas v'shalom politically. What I mean is that the Rambam, who only overlapped in the Ramban about 12 years, if not mistaken, I think the Rambam dies in 1204 and the Ramban is born in 1194. You can look that up. It's something along those lines. I'm sure somebody will look it up right now and tell me whether I'm right or wrong. Seder. And they overlap for about 10 years. But the Ramban is born into a world that was just completely changed by the Rambam. And what the Rambam does, you know, in general, is look to make things as, you know, he's progressive from the standpoint of trying to perfect things and make things as great as possible. And that's why the Rambam goes on and, you know, creates his own Sefer HaMitzvos against the Bahag, which was the traditional way. So the Rambam recategorizes the entire Gemara into a Mishnah Torah, as opposed to everybody else, people before him, the Rif, the Rebbe Gash, and others, that were writing commentaries on the Gemara and going according to what the Gemara was doing. The Rambam says, why don't I have a systematic way and create the Mishnah Torah? And you know, obviously, in terms of the Rambam's philosophy and the Mor Nevuchim, being heavily influenced by a lot of Greek philosophy. There's a lot of Aristotle going on over there, some Plato as well. And that's who the Rambam was. And the Ramban, in general, is always looking to defend the previous dor. I'm not saying this is what their motivation is, but you see this a lot, it's consistent. So the Ramban is going to defend the Bahag against the Rambam. The Ramban will defend the traditional way of learning the Gemara against the Rambam, but the Rambam's coming to and reads it in a more rational way. The Ramban, for example, the Milchamos, what are the Milchamos doing? You know the Milchamos Hashem, yes? Back of the Gemara?
Defend the Rif
from the Baal Mor. Exactly, defending the Rif from the Baal Mor, right? Same idea. So if you look, that's what the Ramban is constantly doing. He's defending people. So the Ramban comes to the defense of the Bahag and says, why doesn't the Bahag count the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem? And, you know, he gives a beautiful mashal. Look at the other line, right near Midaito. So what was he saying? What the Ramban is telling us, the chat, what's going on here? Still choppy. What about now? Not better. Oh man. How do I fix this? Let's stop share. Better? How about now? I feel like I'm the phone commercial. Can you hear me now? You know what I'm talking about? Still no good. What about now?
What's up, baby?
What am I supposed to do? What about now? This is good?
Yeah.
I totally changed it from something else. I did same as system as opposed to speakers. Whatever. Okay, we're good? This works for people. Okay, now back to our regular scheduled program. The Ramban basically has like a bit of a mushroom. The Ramban basically is saying, you know, imagine there was a person who came to your town and said, I'm your king. You may have not realized, but I'm actually the king of, Five Towns, Toronto, Chicago, and Efrat. And am I missing anywhere else?
Who's in the Five Towns here?
I said five, what?
Who's in Five Towns?
Oh, nobody's in the Five Towns here?
No.
Me, sorry. Okay. Anyways,
What's that?
Okay, the sixth. Okay, so the 6-10. Okay, anyways, somebody comes and says, I'm the king of all these things. And by the way, you know, my first order of business is that you need to eat Cheerios on Tuesday, right? So are you going to eat Cheerios on Tuesday? So the answer is, well, kind of depends. Do you believe me that I'm the king of these towns? Or don't you believe I'm the king of the towns? If you believe that I'm the king of the town, so then you'll eat Cheerios on Tuesday. If you don't believe I'm the king of the town, so then I'm just some crazy guy who's advocating for, healthier breakfast on Tuesday mornings. Yes? So what the Ramban is saying, listen, belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a prerequisite to mitzvos. It is not a mitzvah in and of itself. It doesn't make any sense. Right? It's not on the same level as other mitzvos. How could you say such a thing? Right, you need to believe in the person who's commanding. in order to accept the, or fulfill the commandments. But if you don't have it that way, so then there is there's nothing to talk about. There is no there is no mitzvah of emunah, and that's how the Ramban comes and defends the Bahag. And that's an excellent defense, right? I think we could all admit that there's a fundamental difference between believing in a Kadosh Baruch Hu and, you know, shatness. Correct? Does that make sense to us? You could slip up on one. I don't know if you could slip up on the other. Okay. So that's exactly what the Ramban comes in defense of the Bahag. Then that just leaves with the question, Lamaisa, like, okay, so then what is the Rambam talking about? Like, what is the Rambam going to say back to the Bahag? So if you look in source number 10, which I have in front of you, so the Rambam says something very interesting. When the Rambam actually codifies the mitzvah of Emunah, both in Yisodei HaTorah, in the various places, so he says something very interesting. In the Koteras, he says, Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, Yish b'cholen eser mitzvos, sheish mitzvos asei, var mitzvos los asei, v'zehu piriton. Number one is, Leida sheyisha meloka. Number one is to believe that there is a God. That's number one. Look, now what does he say? The point is, he says, Leida sheyisha meloka. What is Leida? What does that mean? Anybody? Number, to know, right? To know that there's a God, right? That's different than Lahamin. Correct? The Rambam is particular. He says, not Lahamin sheyisha meloka, but Leida. And the Rambam, once again, in the beginning of Yisodei Torah, says the same thing. Yisodei Yisodei, the Amud HaChachmos, Leida sheyisha matzoi rishon. That it's important that we know that there is a first cause, a matzoi rishon. The matzoi rishon is what we're really focusing on. So it's very clear, according to the Rambam, that it's not just about the belief in Hashem, but it's about the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to talk about this, certainly at length in a moment, exactly what does that mean and why is that so important. But we see from the Rambam, at the very least, that he changes from Lahamin to Leida. If you look in source number 12, I took from the Sefer Otros HaMusar. Otros HaMusar was actually written by the former Mashkiach of Yeshiva Chalvim. Anybody know who that was? Go for it, Effie.
Moshe Tzuriel.
Excellent, Moshe Tzuriel. My name is Elitzur. Why is my name Elitzur? Number one, my father liked the name. Number two, my father learned Bechavrusa with Rav Tzuriel when he was in Yeshiva in 1979 or 1980 or something like that. So, he thought that he could get a two-for-one. You know, Lechavod is Rebbe. Number two to, because he liked the name. Anyways, so he's written many Svarim. One of them is called Otros HaMusar. And there he goes through a lot of different ideas of Machshavim Musar. And he quotes the Rambam in the Morah Nevuchim. And the Rambam basically says, if I could update his mashal, you know, the way that I would update his mashal would be as follows. Imagine that there's a concert that one could go to. Yishai Rebo, and I don't know who else. Avram Fried was the one who played recently. That everybody was like going crazy over? Like that's where it was at? Are we throwing in Mordechai Shapiro? I don't know. Whatever. Whoever you want, okay? Make it the best okay. Whatever. Make it the best concert that one could think of, okay? And it's free. Anybody can go to the concert. But, like, you gotta find your way there. You gotta find your way to the town. So Lamai said there are different people who are trying to get there. Some people they're very old school and they have, you know, one of those maps. Like an old map, like an atlas. And they're trying to find their way into the town. So they plan out this whole entire thing, but there are detours and there are closures and they miss a sign. So they're able to get to the outskirts of the town, but they can't manage to get inside the town. That's one group of people. So another group of people, they have MapQuest. When I was growing up, MapQuest was like the coolest thing ever. Everybody know what MapQuest is? MapQuest is like, you would go online, you would type in your starting location and then your end location, and it would give you point by point directions. Like, you know, how far and like how you turn, like you, and you would print out with you to tell you exactly where to go. So that was MapQuest. So MapQuest is great because, you know, it had like the updates, but like if you miss a turn on MapQuest, then it really sucks. So these people got inside the town, but they were not able to do more than getting inside the town. And that was it. What are we still, can't hear me? The precursor to Google Maps. Exactly. Yeah. Precursor to Google Maps. Something like that. No, Google Maps on your phone could actually give you directions to where to go. So then after, this is like you just printed it out. Then after, so then there was those type of people. Then there were some people that had a GPS, a Garmin. That was like, that was a big thing, a Garmin. Anybody know what I'm talking about with the Garmin? Yeah?
I mean, that the rental cars used to like make you pay $300 extra dollars to get a GPS.
Oh, really? Okay, fine. So that's like the Garmin. The Garmin was great because it was like a GPS, but like the satellite system was awful. And then it was like recalculating, you know, all the time. And like it took like 45 minutes to recalculate if you missed a turn. So these people, Mamish, got inside the city. And they got further than the MapQuest people because they were like Mamish right out to the concert. But they couldn't find their way. Like they were on the outskirts of where the concert was. And then lo and behold, Baruch Hashem, you know, the new door, what are they able to have? They ever have Waze. And Waze was Mamish able to take them, the Fnai, the Fnim, front row seats to Yishai Ribo and Avram Fried. Okay. Says the Rambam, that's exactly the relationship we have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. What do you mean? The greater your knowledge of the Ribono Sholom, then the closer you are into entering into his inner chambers. Everybody has a free pass. Everybody's welcome to come to the concert, which is a relationship with Hashem. But based on your knowledge, the information you have, the way that you know that Hashem interacts with the world, and what he's trying to send you messages. So then the closer you are and the more that you're able to enter into and get back, you know, backstage passes, so to speak, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's basically what the Rambam is telling us in source number 12. That that is the purpose of Emunah B'Hashem. The purpose of Emunah B'Hashem, that's the Leida, to know. Because just to believe is nice, but knowing means that it's more, it's all-encompassing. It's not a yes or no proposition. It is understanding not just God, you know, exists, but knowing that God exists, proving that he exists, and therefore understanding that he's interacting with this world in a certain way. And the more sophisticated my knowledge of that fact, then the closer I get towards him, and that's exactly, you know, entering into the inner chambers of Hashem. That's what the Rambam gives a beautiful mashal in the Mor Nevuchim. And I think with this, we could go back and answer our initial question. We asked on the Rambam, how could it be that when it comes to the mitzvah of Emunah B'Hashem, that he counts it as a mitzvah, isn't the Bahag right that it's a prerequisite? It's, you know, it's whether you accept the moon or not, like that's what it is. More than that, also people ask this question all the time. Can you command somebody to believe in something? No, it's either you do or you don't, correct? So the answer is no, because for the Rambam, Emunah is more all-encompassing than just, do you believe or don't you believe? It is knowledge of Hashem. It is a sophisticated, philosophical understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the more sophisticated, and the more thought out, and the more involved and in-depth that understanding, then the greater kiyum you have in the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem. The greater kiyum you have in the mitzvah of Emunah. And therefore, of course the Rambam counts it as a mitzvah, because it's not an all or nothing proposition. It's not just a precursor to the mitzvah to Shar Mitzvahs, but it's something which you need to work on constantly in order to deepen your connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is it okay if we keep on going further? I know like we started late and stuff like that. I don't know if people are running. We're good? If you guys need to jump off, you certainly just jump off. But
Rabbi,
yes.
Only your thing is gonna end soon, so if we're gonna do the parsha.
I didn't even get the 10-minute warning yet. So
okay.
I normally get the 10-minute warning, and then I'll have a better sense going forward. Okay. So the Rambam is not the only one, but this is a good hakdama to talking about different modes of being mekayim in the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem. So the Chovos Levavos in source number 13 and 14 give a beautiful description about why Emunah must be one of what we would call Derech Chakira, Leida, philosophical inquiry. And the Chovos Levavos says, you know, imagine that there was a bunch of people who were, following in a group, right? And, or you could have a mashal, let's say you're on a teal. I don't know, relax and take you on a teal. You're on Tanakh trails, Alicia. And, you know, you're going to see the wonderful trails of Tanakh. I don't know what else Tanakh trails is other than trails in Tanakh. And, like, relax and like taking you to, like, different, like, awesome places. And, like, you know, you're all on this, like, long teal. And imagine, like, the entire yeshiva went. and there are, or whatever, you go on the Nachli Yudia. Let's make it easier. Okay? This way you wouldn't have to learn Tanakh. You should go to Nachli Yudia. Stop, right? So you go to Nachli Yudia. And Rebezer is leading the group. So everybody's thinking, where are you going? You're like, oh, we're going to Nachli Yudia. What are you doing there? Well, there's this huge waterfall that, you know, we get to jump down and jump off. It's going to be awesome, into this big Mayan. So people say, oh, so you're going to the Mayan. Yeah, well, where's the Mayan? Oh, I'm following the person in front of me. Okay, so then you ask the person in front of you, like, well, where are you going? I'm going to the Mayan. Well, where's the Mayan? Well, I'm following the person in front of me. And basically, the only person who knows where to go is Rav Ezra, right? Now, what would happen if Rav Ezra, you know, let everybody off a cliff? You'd all die, right? Do you know what I'm saying? Meaning, nobody really knows what they're doing. They're all just following the person in front of them. That, says the Chovos Levavos, is a problem with Emuna via Misora, via Kabbalah, acceptance of the previous generation. There's an inherent flaw there. Because if somebody makes a mistake in terms of understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then, you know, that is terrible. That's going to be awful. That's going to be spiritually hazardous to you. And therefore, it's important that you yourself don't become one of those blind followers, because maybe you might get let off a cliff, Rachman al-Utslan. Rather, what's important is that you have your own understanding of Emunah B'Hashem. What's important is that you have your own understanding of Yediyas Hashem, and by doing so, you'll never be let off a cliff, because you'll be constantly checking and fact-checking and making sure that you have the proper relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the Chovos Levavos says that in two different places. It's mamash kedai for you to read the two places which I brought for you, but because we're pressed for time, we're not going to go over it, we're not going to read it inside right now, but like I said, it's certainly kedai to read. And that seems to be the approach of most of the Rishonim. Most of the Rishonim fall within this category of philosophical inquiry. Rav Sadi Gaon, Amudas Videos, like we said, the Chovos Levavos, the Rambam, the Mordechuchim, many other Rishonim as well seem to follow suit when it comes to this perspective of, you know, Anuachi Hashem. If I could give a bit of a mashal in terms of what the Chovos Levavos is talking about, you know, who was it? Hillel, who didn't believe in Mashiach, right? Correct? Wasn't one of the Yud Gimli Karim? Do you know what I'm talking about? Rav Chaim calls him a Nebuch Apikoros, but he's not Apikoros nonetheless. No? Okay, whatever. Not time for right now, but the point is that any wrong or faulty assumption that you may have about Yediyas Hashem could be spiritually hazardous for you. However, there's another approach when it comes to this, and this seems to be the approach chosen certainly by the Achronim, certainly by the Bali Musar, and the previous generation of Bali Machshava. Certainly within the realm of Chassidus, this is certainly the mode in which they chose, and that is not Emunah Derech Chakira, but Emunah Derech Kabbalah, or Derech Mesorah. And there's a very beautiful footnote over here by the Rav in Lonely Men of Faith. Can we read it together? Sure, why not? Excellent. Says the Rav, ready? I'll try to explain it to the best of my ability. I intentionally use the term cosmic instead of cosmological. While one may speak of the cosmic confrontation of man and God as an experiential reality, it's hard to speak of a cosmological experience. When God is apprehended in reality, it is an experience. When God is comprehended through reality, it is just intellectual performance. What is he saying? Can I translate that into English? Sure. What the Rav is trying to say is that there's a difference between, and this is what the Rav is going to go on about, that the Rav is not a fan of these abstract formulations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm sorry, these abstract formulations, a proof for the existence of God. The Rav is not into it. The Rav thought that it was lacking in terms of the experiential nature of a person's relationship with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to really fully understand what the Rav's talking about is, number one, you have to understand what would be an abstract proof of God. And number two, you have to try to understand exactly where the Rav's coming from in terms of his own philosophy. Should we spend some time talking about this right now? Sure, why not? Can I give you one, you know, proof for the existence of Hashem? Yes? Okay, this one is kind of found in the Rambam, as well as, certainly in other strains of religions and followers of the Rambam. Lahavdil being the Rambam and, you know, other people. Thomas Aquinas, who was a was a church father who very much was also influenced by the Rambam, formulated this this proof of God as well. Goes back to Aristotle as well. The primary mover. Yes, do we know this one? Do we know how this goes? I'll try to sum it up briefly. The way that I, you know, there's a book which I, a book by a professor named Edward Fieser, if you're interested in stuff, called The Last Superstition. He also wrote another book called The Five Proofs of the Existence of God. If you're interested in dabbling in philosophy a little bit, these things are quite fascinating, and he does a gewaltig job of giving proofs for the existence of a creator. Whatever, we can talk about that at a different time. But what he does, and let me put it this way. Let's see if I can explain this clearly in the short amount of time we have remaining. There are two types of relationships that one could have, or causes, okay, causal relationships. So there's a father and a son, causal relationship, right? A father, father's a son, and then the son fathers another son, etc., etc. Now, are those dependent or independent causal relationships? Those things are independent. Why? Because when the father ceases to exist, the son could exist by himself. Correct? We all make them all make sense to us? Right, that's good. Okay. However, there are certain things which are dependent upon each other. Okay? There are certain relationships or causalities that are dependent upon each other. So, for example, I'm sitting in my room and my laptop is sitting on a desk. And the desk is sitting on is on the floor. And the floor is, held up by the foundations of the building. And the building is held up by the ground beneath us, going down and down to the earth. So now, let's say the floor ceased to exist. So then what would happen? My desk would fall and everything would fall down, right? Okay, good. So that we understand. So that's in terms of the here and now. But what philosophers like to point out is that there's also that type of relationship when it comes to all movement that takes place in the world. So, Lamashal, imagine in my hand was a stick, okay? Right here. I'm going to lower my camera. So, here's a... one second. Let's do this. Here's my phone, okay? And here is... And here is this Barilon thing, cover. Yes? Now, I'm moving the Barilon cover. You see what I'm doing? By moving my phone, correct? Now, they are dependent upon each other. Does that make sense? Right? Without the phone, then the case wouldn't move. Correct? Yes? Meaning that there must be a starting point here because they're all dependent upon each other. So we see that the case is dependent on my phone and the phone is dependent on my hands. Where are my hands dependent upon? Like the bones of my body. Okay, great. How do my bones move? So that's dependent on the neurons firing from my brain. Okay, what is that dependent upon? If you keep on going back, not in time, but in terms of reality, there needs to be a starting point for that movement to take place. The bottom level there is God. That's what they say. That's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? If you unpack it and you read it, it's an awesome, awesome proof. It's really fantastic. So also gets into Eino Bilvado, it's up to Hashem, he's part of every single action that you do. There's a really, really cool proof of the existence of Hashem. Now, what the Rav, that's when it comes to that. Now, the Rav is not a fan of this, because for the Rav was a very experiential person, and in terms of his philosophy, he was an existentialist. Well, not entirely. But he created a lot of meaning out of his experience. The Rav was very into that. What the Rav says is, I don't know if you enjoyed that proof of God or not, I thought it was awesome, but even if you did, that's so removed from reality. You know what I'm saying? That's so removed from your experience with Hashem. That's like a 2 plus 2 equals 4. So even though 2 plus 2 equals 4, does that change your experience? Does that move you? Does that inform you in any such way? No, it's not. It's something which is so foreign from one's personality. And that's what he's saying. Let's go further. He says, that's what he says, it's just intellectual performance. Therefore, one must not equate this cosmic experience, no matter how inadequate it is, with Judah Levi's God of Aristotle. As we mentioned in the text, and the cosmic experience is part of the the patriarchal tradition, the halacha has granted full recognition to this experience, which is reflected in many of our benedictions. Okay, now this is a part that he's going at. The trouble with all rational demonstrations of the existence of God, which the history of philosophy abounds, consists in their being exactly what they were meant to be from those formulated them. What are they? What's the problem with what I just said? They're abstract, logical demonstrations divorced from the living primal experience in which these demonstrations are rooted. Meaning, they have nothing to do with your reality, nothing to do with your experience and your relationship with Hashem. For instance, cosmic experience was transformed into cosmological proof, Tantric experience into ontological proof, etc. Instead of starting out with the most elementary existential awareness of the subjective, I exist, the objective, the world around me exists, awareness is unattainable as long as the ultimate reality of God is not part of this awareness. Okay, then he goes on. Go to the next paragraph, because the next paragraph is beautiful, the depiction of what he's saying. Does a loving bride embraced in her, of her beloved ask for proof that he is alive and real? Must a prayerful soul clinging in passionate love and ecstasy to her beloved demonstrate that he exists? So, right? What is he saying? Well, what he's saying is as follows. You could question anything, whether something exists or not. Like, meaning there are philosophers all over the place who question whether this conversation between us is happening at all, or whether it's all figment of somebody's imagination. But are we actually questioning the fact that I'm on Zoom right now teaching you Torah? No, we're not questioning that. That's just meaning in terms of our experience, this is happening is as real as anything else in the world. So too, when a chas and a kala are embracing each other and they feel love for each other, there's no questioning whether this is real or not, right? There's no questioning. And so too says the Rav, when it comes to our relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, that's what it's all about. The abstract proof of like, well, does God exist? Doesn't want to exist? Like, what are you talking about? You know, I know God exists because I have a relationship with Him. Because I dive into Him. Because I crawl out to Him in my time of need. Because I feel the Mimamakim. That's exactly how I know I have a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And that's what the Rav is really getting at. There's really two quick points. Should we jump back in for the Dvar Torah? Or do you guys have to run? Do you want to jump back in for the Dvar Torah? Why don't we jump back in for the Dvar Torah? Because it could be up in 1 minute. Sounds good? Just rejoin the thing again. Gevaldik. Okay. See everybody soon.